Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, creating lifestyles and livelihoods of sustainable prosperity.
Universe Spirit offers strategies for tackling humanity's most urgent global challenge, climate destabilization.
Go to universespirit.org to find out how you can make a difference in our quest for a prosperous and sustainable future. It's October 19, 2015, and you're listening to Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional here at Lupin, but the truth is always naked. And I'm Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider, and we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about life's essential questions, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and a few surprises.
Our show tonight is brought to you by Go Raw. And I just heard from Rob Freeman, who's the CEO of Go Raw, and he just sent me a little note today. He's out on the desert on his motorcycle, having a whale of a deserty kind of time.
And so, that's what eating Go Raw can do for you.
That's right. It'll put you out there. And you can get Go Raw at Trader Joe's and Costco and where else?
Oh, Safeway, Whole Foods, everywhere good food is sold.
We're happy to be with you tonight. Don't get me wrong, because, well, don't get me wrong is the focus of tonight's program. Right and wrong, good and bad, moral, immoral. These are just some of the lightweight topics we'll engage in relating to tonight's focus. But hey, don't get me wrong. We'll get into our normal heavy stuff for you philosophical junkies out there, not to worry. But as Molière said, it infuriates me to be wrong when I know I'm right. You know who Molière is, I trust? He was a famous French-Swiss cheesemaker in northern France.
He was not.
Okay. Actually, a 17th century French playwright considered to be one of the greatest masters of comedy in Western literature. He'd made fun of many of our human traits, like, well, throwing your computer at the wall when it doesn't write funny stuff.
And that wasn't in the 1600s.
I'm just kidding. I know that he used the typewriter. Anyway, so if you've ever...
Wrong again.
So if you've ever wronged or been wrong, felt wronged, or if you think everybody else is wrong, well, I hope you'll just hang in with us tonight. We're going to have some laughs, music, our array of delight and characters, and our usual twists of metaphysical notions and speculations. Oh, Molière also said, people don't mind being mean, but they never want to be ridiculous. I wish I'd said that. Don't get me wrong. The problem with being wrong is that people might just think you're ridiculous. But if that bothers you, well, you could just be mean to them. Okay, we're ready to go, right, Rochelle? Don't get me wrong.
No, don't get me wrong, please. Whatever you do, do not get me wrong. Wrong is worthy of scorn,
Ooh. Which
is a frightful punishment. Only by being right do I have meaning, substance. At least at this point, that's an awareness.
Don't get me wrong. Is that anything like don't get me started?
Nope.
Oh.
Totally different. I'll tell you why it's different. I mean, because we don't want to be taken wrong. We don't want to be wrong. And that's why we can say, don't get me wrong. I mean, you can say the most horrible thing in the world, but don't get me wrong, because I'm not really meaning that as just falling out of my mouth. I found that funny. Well, you're not paying attention. Come on, Errol.
Okay, I was out back there looking
He's
for
reading
all the
for
wrong
something.
Things that I've done back in my twisted mind. This is a line from this book called Being Wrong, and she says, of all things we are wrong about, this idea of error might well top the list. It is our meta mistake. We are wrong about what it means to be wrong.
I like that.
So she devotes a whole book to this, which we've talked about in another exciting episode of Inside Out. Being wrong to me is an opportunity. As a matter of fact, she goes on to say, far from being a mark of indifference or intolerance, wrongness is a vital part of how we learn and change. Paradoxically, we live in a culture that simultaneously despises error and insists that it is central to our lives.
Yeah, we really do have this thing about not being wrong. You are ridiculed if you're wrong. Ah, she said, Papa, you know, I remember that. You know, just saying the wrong answer.
Who was that?
In school, if you said the wrong answer, kids made fun of you.
When your whole criteria for your quality is something that's measured by test. We were just listening to this program on public radio about these schools, realizing that it's not just about what can be measured in tests, but about growing and building character. And in our culture, that isn't given near as much emphasis as test scores, because, of course, education is tied to jobs and money and security and all the things we think we need. Whereas character is something, while we respect it and usually honored and appreciated, it doesn't get like the same level of attention that the test scores get. And that side of the equation. Don't get me wrong.
I would never do such a thing.
Okay.
Well, don't get me wrong. No. If I say that building character, what kind of character? We're so inundated with characters on television. Like, sometimes the more far out you are, the better character you might be. And the character you're talking about is like building good character. Building a sense of self that's strong and vital and also includes others.
So we're beginning to define character. And incidentally, probably the best essay I've written on that was by Martin Buber. He talked about education and education and character. And he does a fabulous job of elucidating the importance and the significance of doing that. It's in a book called Between Man and Man. Don't get me wrong. He's not referring to women and women, but let's face it, it wasn't as politically important at that time when Martin Buber wrote that book, which was probably in early 20th century, I'm guessing.
It is amazing how women became so inferior to men, for just because they were the ones that raised the children and prepared us for the next generation and did all the taking care of all the necessary things of daytime. How that let them be minor is pretty amazing to me, but don't get me wrong.
Okay, woman. I won't.
A woman's mind is so different from a man's.
Really?
No, don't get me wrong.
Okay. How is it different? I want to hear this. Y'all listening in here, because she's going to describe how her mind is different than mine. Of course, she doesn't really know mine, but she has observations, which we're about to hear.
That in itself tells you how different it is, because I know mine.
Oh.
So if I don't know yours, it must be different. Because if it were like mine, I would know yours easily. It's become a cliche, but, you know, men are hunters and women are gatherers. And I think that very nature makes the way we think differently. It doesn't mean we don't come to the same conclusions. It's just we travel a different road to get to those conclusions. I'm not saying one road is better than the other, but to understand that, don't get me wrong. If we could understand that, we'd have a much better relationship with the opposite sex, whatever your opposite might be.
Right. It can be similar and opposite.
Right. And it may not even be sex. It's just an opposite mind. Let's put it that way.
Well, another thing she says in this book, which I appreciated, when mistakes happen anyway, we typically respond as if they hadn't or as if they shouldn't have. We deny them, wax defensive about them, ignore them, downplay them, or blame them on somebody else.
Those are very good hints of how to deal with it. don't get me wrong.
Right. Now, that wasn't a lesson in how to deal with it, by the way. Especially the thing about the blaming thing, right? So let's take a second just to kind of consider this whole question about blame and ask ourselves, really, who's to blame and who's to bless?
If a cheated man's a loser, and a cheater never wins, and if beggars can't be choosers, till they're weak and wealthy men, and the old keep getting older, and the young must do the same, and it's never getting better, who's to bless and who's to blame? All the cards are on the table. You done laid your money down. Don't complain about your chances, boy. It's the only game in town. And the meaning doesn't matter. Way you play the game, the winner or the loser, who's to bless, who's to blame?
That would be Kris Kristofferson.
Really?
Who's to bless and who's to blame? The issue of wrongness, don't get me wrong, it's so tied into our morality. And Catherine Schultz, that's who wrote that book about being wrong, gets into that in a lot of interesting ways. And she has a great sense of humor. So it's really a wonderful examination of that whole phenomenon of mistakes and misunderstanding and how we relate to all that. I think you mentioned earlier, so much of our self-image is tied up with we got to be right. And if you're not right, it's not just that you made a mistake, but there's something wrong with you.
I was indoctrinated very young. In our house, it was sort of like a one-dimensional viewpoint of the world. They stood right in front of the tree. They never circled it. And if I was coming from a different angle, looking at that tree, I was wrong. It wasn't I had a different view of the tree. I was wrong. It was very obvious. Oh, no, that's not okay. A lot of no's around that. So it wasn't acceptable. And because it wasn't acceptable, I felt kind of pushed away. So in order to be accepted, I had to be right. For the longest time in my life, being wrong was like some kind of painful experience. It hurt my heart. It was like, ugh. I was being jolted with one of those electric prods. It was very painful, and I would do anything to take that shame away, fight with people. I'm not wrong. You're wrong. You know, that kind of thing.
Let me ask Professor Umbridge, who's with us again tonight, if he has some perspectives, insights on don't get me wrong.
Oh, good evening. This is Professor Umbridge. What I would say about being wrong is that when you're wrong, there's this tendency to create a gap between yourself and that which you feel wrong about. Now, don't get me wrong, because the gap can be quite useful, of course, because it really allows for some creativity, because everything in you, of course, you want to close the gap once you feel the ache of having the gap there. And many people live their lives with a gaping gap. And we call those people the gaping gapers. Yes, well, and you'll see when you walk around the streets, many of the gaping gappers, They won't show it overtly, but if you tune into the psyche, they will be madly running around looking for something to hold on to maintain their existence. Don't get me wrong. They're very good at projecting everything outwards, and this is why they're so excellent, the gaping gappers, at the blaming. And there are two factions of gaping gappers. There are the blamers, and then there are the blessers, so those who are all seeking for blessing. So we would like to send them some blessings tonight and let them know that it's not really necessary to stick in the gaping gap blame and all those false assumptions. They're being wrong anyway, because the fact is, most everything we think we know is really not actually true, because it's filtered through a perceptual framework that is based upon the most limited of human experiences, our five senses, and that which they're able to behold and interact with. And, of course, the conclusions and interpretations we draw from all of that in order to maintain, gratify, and perpetuate ourselves.
Oh, I would totally agree, Professor. It's not just the sense of shame that comes up when you're wrong, when you're labeled wrong. Every great inventor of an invention had to walk through that wall of wrong because it wasn't what was. How could it be right if you've never seen it before? And in your imagination, it couldn't possibly work. So it has to be wrong. And therefore, the people who invented it are wrong. And a lot of wonderful, brilliant, creative people were stoned, were crucified, were lots of bad things happened to them because they were deemed wrong.
Because they were stoned. Don't get me wrong. Like Aldous Huxley, I think he was stoned all the time when he wrote.
Don't get me wrong, Errol. I wouldn't be talking about such a thing.
I did get you wrong, actually. That was a good example of getting you wrong.
You did. You got me totally wrong. But I'd like to redeem being wrong, because that thing she said in that book about that's how we learn. If you are afraid to make a mistake, you don't move forward. You have to make mistakes. Well, how many mistakes by Edison before the light bulb was found? Lots. That's not a mistake. It's just not working. Until it works, it's not wrong. It's just not working.
That's right. But it takes some awareness to be able to arrive at that place. Not only that, you don't want to be misunderstood. And I think to get really to the heart of that feeling of being misunderstood, I'm going to ask Miss Nina Simone to take us on this ride.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. You know, sometimes, baby, I'm so carefree. Joy that's hard to hide. And then sometimes again it seems that all I have is worry. And then you're bound to see my other side. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. I get more than my share, but that's one thing I never mean to do, 'cause I love you. Oh, baby, I'm just human. Don't you know I have faults like anyone? Sometimes I find myself alone regretting so.
done. 'Cause I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.
Of that song sung by Nina Simone, you could feel it. That's why we like to play music on our show, because it's one thing to have a conversation and use words to describe our point of views, but art takes us into the point of view and allow us to more empathetically engage with something. And that song came from a very deep place that she was able to touch as an artist in terms of the soul. My intentions are good.
Yeah, and nobody can be alive and be an angel. I thought that was a good one.
It reminds me of a line from the Arantxa book, which we've often quoted. It's out now in a miniseries, by the way. Don't get me wrong.
I definitely got you wrong on that one.
But it indicates how we necessarily are wrong, and all our ideas about reality, because we rely upon universe frames in which to operate, but they're all essentially erroneous to one degree or another. So there's a process that we go through as we confront our ignorance and are okay in that ignorance. Wrote something about this today, that's why we are recommended to have a beginner's mind from a Buddhist tradition, or the child mind from a more Jesusonian point of view, and willing to engage and embrace the wrongness. One thing that happens to me, sometimes I'll start to do something that thinks like it's a good idea, make something more efficient, and I'll find myself stopping. Well, if it's such a good idea, why aren't other people doing it? Like, sometimes if we go to the beach and the beach is wide open, and I'm thinking, why? What's wrong with all the wide open beach if nobody's sitting on it? Don't get me wrong.
You learned that early in life. You did not come to that as a conclusion.
But I still catch myself encountering that question mark. It's like I'm looking over my shoulder and looking around and going, it can't be such a good idea because no one else thought of it, and I just thought of it. So I have to do a little self-forgiving, which is what that song, I believe, was asking for, of myself. It's okay. You can do this. You're the one who thought of it. And now it is so.
Yeah. I mean, when she was singing that, I don't know if she didn't mention these things or talk about them, but I realized that problems are to be solved. That's what makes them a problem. And if I created that problem, let's say, and therefore that's my mistake, then I'm the best person to solve it. It's like I make a knot in something. I'm the best person to take it out. Don't get me wrong.
Speaking of knots, now don't get me wrong, but I've been having this terrible difficult time, which I've shared with Rochelle, getting these particular shoes on and off. These are like hiking boots that I work in the restaurant. I wear them because they're one of the few shoes that are wide enough for my foot. But the way the strings are in there, and it just takes me forever to get them apart. And if I don't get them apart enough, and when I'm getting ready to go to the restaurant to cook, and I'm usually running late, so I'm trying to get them on my feet quick.
Uh-huh.
But
there's
get
a
all
problem to be solved there.
Jammed up. And I go through this thing, it's driving me crazy. And I've been in many stores trying to find a shoe that's wide enough for my foot. But I couldn't even find a store that was wide enough for my foot. But it's not both feet, by the way. Don't get me wrong, right-footed people. It's the left foot. It kind of splays out so I can never find shoes that are like. But anyway, today as I was on the way to cook, I had this idea, zoom, that if I didn't lace every hole and kind of skipped some holes, it might be looser and easier to do.
Don't get me wrong, Errol. I would have another solution to your problem.
What's that?
Start earlier.
Uh-huh. So is that an example of the men thinking versus women thinking?
I must be. I'm a woman. You're a man.
Yeah. Okay. That works. But then when I got into it, now this is kind of a silly, small little thing, but it's these little things that are so like delicious.
Well, yeah. Mosquitoes are really small too.
I wouldn't sure want to compare it to the mosquito. By the way, the most dangerous animal there is, it's killed more human beings anyway than any other animal. Small that it is, boy, it packs a wallop.
Malaria.
Don't get me wrong.
I want to. I'd like for once to get you wrong.
Really?
Huh. And I'm joking.
I don't think you're joking. I think there's kind of a subtle...
No, there isn't.
I've seen how you kind of bring that little subtlety thing into certain conversations. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, I have to apologize. You are wrong.
Oh, my God. That's just so simple. But when I go back and look at this wrong thing, what we need sometimes to be able to be there for someone who might be in error of their ways, according to our picture, or when I look in the mirror and I see that, to realize it's not a complicated thing. It's just a simple change of heart.
There's never been a day when the world wasn't new, when the sun did not rise, or the light break on through. Beyond bad weather, and the world holds its breath just to see where we'll incline this time. Ha la la la, ha la la la, ha la la la. I feel something has shifted. I know the story's changed in the window of a crisis. We can do.
Carrie Newcomer. Now, don't get me wrong, she's a newcomer to me, but that's actually her name, Carrie Newcomer.
What's the name of that song?
A Simple Change of Heart. Listen to these lyrics in related to our subject. She says, there's no shame in learning something when there's something that must be learned, but there's danger when we will not see what our actions earn. Courage doesn't always shout, but whispers and reminds when we get up one long morning and we try another time. We tried yelling at each other. It hasn't worked so well, throwing gas on a fire. Never helped us, as far as I can tell. Throwing stones cut deep. a little kindness goes deeper still.
Oh, I like that. That's really nice. You know, this afternoon I was with someone. We were talking about what people do that are wrong. And then I realized that they're not wrong. They just don't do it like I do it, or that I would think to do it, or why don't they think to do it that way? Because something must be wrong with them if they don't do it the way I do it. There's something funny about that. I don't know. I found it funny for the first time that somebody's wrong if they don't do it like I do it.
Do you want to say something, Rabbi, about that?
Well, yes, of course, I want to come in. This is Rabbi Greenberg, and the whole thing about wrong and right, you know, the scribes, the people who studied the Torah for like 1,500 years, 2,000 years, they sat at tables and trying to decide, is this right? Is this what God wants? Is this right? Should we take the cow in from the back door, or is it should go in the front door? It depends if it's all Sabbath coming down on the light and the back door is closer to the light going out, that back door will be okay to take out the cow. This is the kind of thing that we, my tradition, spent years trying to understand because we wanted to know, what does God want? What is the formula? What's right? Please, God, don't let me be wrong, for God's sake. It's a horrible thing to have to have.
Don't get me wrong.
Don't get me wrong now, because it is a good impulse within us, but our human beings and our immaturity, we think we can come up with the answer by manipulating time and space. You get up and you do this, it's not okay to do this, and the cow can go out the side door because it's already opened. You see what I'm saying? There's no criteria. Now, a new criteria I would like to suggest, is it more workable? Is it bring more goodness of life to more people, more of the time? And does it advance the growth of your soul? Because that's really all that you're taking with us. You're here to advance the growth of your soul. This is a little pipsqueak of a lifetime. It's boop. You're here, you're gone, you're up, and you're going.
Well, so, don't get me wrong, Rabbi, to interfere with your discourse, but can't you grow your soul a lot sometimes by being wrong?
Of course, of course.
That makes it right.
It makes it right, and which is why I was wrong so many times. And in my family, they did point it out to me how wrong I was. So it gave me great practice in coming to appreciate what a good thing it was to have them tell me I was wrong, because in the beginning, I didn't appreciate it so much. It kind of bothered me.
How did you appreciate it later?
Well, then I learned what you're saying here. Like she says, Catherine, what was it, Schultz. She says that you recognize that a mistake is an opportunity. And so every mistake, I realize, in fact, as I embraced the problem therein, the difficulty, the little thing that had a charge on it, like it was making me fidget in my consciousness, and in my consciousness, when it starts fidgeting, I get nervous, I have to go to the bathroom more times than I used to, so I like to avoid that, because I go to the bathroom enough times already as it is. But don't get me wrong, I don't begrudge going to the bathroom, because if I didn't go to the bathroom, well then
I... That's too much information.
All right.
For me, anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go there. But sometimes the human little pipsqueaky guy jumps in there and has a point of view. But I
don't understand. Say you're wrong. It's just that I guess I personally wasn't interested in how many times you went to the bathroom.
I'd have to agree with you, Rabbi. We love you, and we so appreciate you. And that was an interesting kind of, you know, side perspective that we were about to go on. But we're just going to kind of bring it back to our issue. Don't get me wrong. This is Inside Out, the Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California. Now, we've talked about this, but we don't discuss it very much, and that is Lupin Lodge is a clothing optional place. I had a friend come visit us, and I guess he hasn't been to naturist places over the weekend, and his comment was, as he was walking around and seeing people, was, well, where's the naked people? And our response was, It's cold.
We're not idiots.
Well, some of us are.
What? You want to keep going? Don't get me wrong. I just like sometimes I would.
Go ahead.
I have to say something and I can't wait. Now I forgot what it was. See, that's why I can't wait. I'm going to lose
it. I get it.
Okay.
Oh, you got it.
Yes.
Came back.
What I love about the creed of naturism, especially Lupin, is body acceptance, accepting your body. If you don't have a body that looks like all those bodies that are body gorgeous, that you're wrong. It's the same thing. It's not okay. You're shamed. How do you get a right body? Isn't it a billion-dollar business, weight loss, trying to look like some anorexic model who doesn't eat because she wants to make millions of dollars? There's a right and wrong thing that messes up our little heads a lot. So Lupin is about body acceptance. There's no image. You come here to let go of an image of your own body and have your body be right.
Hello there, this is Father O'Malley. Don't get me wrong, but I felt a need to step in here and say something about the duality that we have to be willing to let go of. And that's the right and wrong point of view at all. What is right and what's wrong? There's what feels good and there's what doesn't feel good. And even within that, there's the feel good that makes others not feel so good, but it makes you feel so good. And then we start asking ourselves, how do we get off of that polarity? I think it's taking a larger perspective there. Stepping up and expanding your worldview so that you take in more. And you recognize that there's these little eensy-weensy little beings. But you see the pipsqueak there. I like that there. And you see that they're just kind of bumping around. Think of a bunch of them in a pinball machine. You know those pinball machines with lots of little small little round objects, bunches of them, and people bouncing around in the pinball machine. Sometimes they go into a little hole. Did you ever go into one of those little holes there in life?
Yes, many times.
Well, I bet you have now there. And then if you wait long enough in a pinball machine, maybe a second or two, come out of the hole and you hit the top of the glass there. You notice that? Remember when you hit the top of the glass with the pinball? You have to be willing to start seeing things as unified and then making the unity happen wherever you can.
To me, and don't get me wrong, Father, I really liked what you said and I agree with it. I just wanted to take it a little step further.
Oh, good. Take it a step, darling. Take it as many steps as you'd like. Step out.
Funny, there's a moment when I have an idea that if I don't give voice to it, it's not right or wrong, but if I don't give voice to it, it goes away. It's like, I just saw something really pretty and it's gone.
That happens to me all the time. Well, thank you, Father O'Malley, letting go of the duality. Boy, that's a pretty big one. That's a challenge.
And yet, it seems part of our growing and learning experience, duality. At some point, you embrace that which is opposite you, or that which is the other. And when you embrace the other, that's when duality would cease to exist. But we don't do that because we have to know ourselves at this point in our evolution by separation. If you're there and I'm here, that's who I am. I'm here. If I'm one with you, who am I? Don't get me wrong. We really do believe that we lose our sense of self in a non-dualistic world, which is why we foster dualism. And don't get me wrong.
Well, it's a way of getting oriented in the universe. If they just dropped us into the universe of the all oneness, just being itself, we don't really know which way to go. Should I go left or right? We have no orientation, and life wants us to move. Right. There's this fundamental motion that life is about.
And we would move instinctively everywhere if we didn't have this sense that when you get to a crossroads, you know, if I go left, I may be wrong. If I go right, I may be wrong. Which is right. What if you just get to a crossroads and you instinctively go in one direction? Whatever happens to you there is what happens to you there.
Well, that goes back to control and trying to control the future, which reminds me of this workshop you went to, and they had an activity where you had to move through a maze on the floor, stepping on letters or words, and there was about X number of squares that you had to step through, and there were two teams divided of 30 people or so. And
did you leave out something about the buzzer?
No, no, I haven't gotten to that.
Okay.
Okay, this is the buzzer coming up moment. Listen close. We're almost at the buzzer. Okay. So what happens is if you step on the wrong one, it buzzes. And then you have to start all over again. So you've got your whole team there watching you, and each one is going to have to go. Each one's going to be the next one.
You win by getting through the whole thing without stepping on the buzzer.
And you can't talk to each other. You can just point as your team. The point I'm getting to, don't get me wrong, there was a challenge there, and the seminar leader said to us, the fastest group who ever got through it was this group of nuns, because they didn't sit there in advance trying to ask that very question. Am I going to make a mistake kind of sitting there hesitantly? No, don't get me wrong. They just each got on it, made a decision, back, next got on it, made a decision, boom.
The other factor was they didn't judge themselves when the buzzer went off, that they had done anything wrong. They just knew that's where the buzzer was, got off quickly, the other team could go on and remember where the buzzer was, because they had no judgment about being wrong going through that thing. If you are on a square of concrete or something and it buzzes, you know, your instinct is, oh, I did something wrong. It's not okay. The buzzer means I made a mistake.
I hate that sound.
And they didn't do that. They didn't go, I made a mistake. It just buzzed. And boy, that was freedom. For me, it was the most freeing story I'd heard at that point in time.
By the way, this is Father O'Malley again. Just want to jump in here and say, those are the non-judging nuns that we had there. We had a few of those, not as many as we would have liked to have had, but they were a special group. They were the non-judgmental nuns. You'd be in their presence. You wouldn't feel so much judged as you'd feel accepted. I forgot what we call that community. The Nungle Huggies. That's what it was.
Oh,
they were the Nungle Huggies.
Don't get me wrong, but you are silly.
Something like, maybe that wasn't exactly it. Well, thank you, Father O'Malley. That was good to know that there's the Nungle Huggies, huh? Very interesting.
Errol, don't take him seriously.
Really? That's not really a Nungle Huggy? I'd like to meet one, wouldn't you?
We did.
We did. We actually did a program for the Franciscan Sisters of the Perpetual Adoration.
And if any one of you are listening to us, it was a marvelous workshop. We had a wonderful time.
God, I love that name. The Franciscan Sisters of the Perpetual Adoration. I wish I thought that up myself.
900.
900 women came from all over the world once every 4 years for their enclave.
Mm-hmm.
And we were asked to be the featured presentation for all these women. Talk about an opportunity to not get me wrong. That was one of them. I actually danced a piece that I wrote, a poem called Jesus Model for a Class today. Rochelle recited it to this beautiful music by Rodrigo. But I didn't have much on other than some dance pants. Now, don't get me wrong.
A lot more than you wear here.
That's right. Right.
Don't get me wrong.
That's right. Right. See, it's all relative. You know, I would not have worn there what I wore here. But nevertheless, for them, just being bare-chested and wearing dance pants was a stretch for a lot of the nuns.
Well, that nun must have been like 90 years old.
Right. Well, you asked her, how did it make you feel?
Did you like it? Did you like the piece? You playing Jesus. And what did she say?
She said, well, it was a little uncomfortable. But she was a novice Nungle Huggy.
Errol, she wasn't a novice. She was very honest.
She was.
She was very sweet, too.
Speaking of being wrong, it reminds me of a time where we did a presentation at a church somewhere like in West Kansas or someplace. And Rochelle was doing this improv in the audience of the congregation. It was a big congregation. Well, not a real conservative, but, you know, socially conservative, certainly, as most church people in that area at that time in that place. Work. Don't get me wrong.
No, we just did, but that's okay.
Okay, I tried to avoid that. But the woman said to you, this is where you get to pick up the story.
I was engaging the audience, and I got very close to this woman and engaging her, and she got very uncomfortable. And she told me to leave, to go away. I don't want you near me. And she was really being very negative to me.
Out loud.
Out
loud. In
front
of everybody.
And I stood there, and something happened to me in that moment, which has not happened very much afterwards, but did in that moment. I felt that I could not be rejected. She was definitely rejecting me, but I was solvent. I was there. It was impossible to reject me. It was such a peaceful, wonderful experience, and I shared it with that congregation. I don't know how that woman took it, but it didn't matter at that point because I had this epiphany, and it was really powerful. And I have moments where I do feel rejected. I mean, don't get me wrong. It is not easy, but I somehow remember as I'm feeling those feelings of rejection that I can't be rejected because of that moment. Don't get me wrong. It's not easy.
Speaking of don't get me wrong, when you see all this kind of negativity in terms of wrong, don't get me wrong, let's give wrongness its fair due. As a concept, it's not completely without value, even though we would like to improve on it. But sometimes you have to ask yourself, you know, what's wrong with this picture?
What's wrong with this picture? Something's not exactly clear. What's wrong with this picture? Doesn't look like it's just another sting. Sting. Does it don't mean a thing? That swing and ding a ding ding. What's wrong with this picture? Doesn't anybody see that's who everyone thought?
Van Morrison singing What's Wrong With This Picture, and the song goes on and he sings, you can't believe what you read in the papers or half the news that's on TV or the gossip of the neighbors or anyone who doesn't want you to be free. I'm not that person anymore. I'm always living in the present time. Don't you understand? I left all that jive behind. Oh, what's wrong with this picture? It's just only hanging on the wall. Why don't we just take it down and just forget it, because that ain't me at all.
But don't get me wrong. I knew it was Van Morrison.
Okay. So where have we come tonight, Rochelle, on this journey? We've looked at Don't Get Me Wrong. We've come up with some
Well, I think the most interesting thing that I expressed early on is that we become aware that which we think we've made a terrible error, mistake, and everything else is really just an opportunity to grow, and then we can become one with it. And when we become one with it, well, don't get me wrong, it's pretty fun.
More and more as I grow older, I almost look forward and certainly grateful for being wrong. Like working here at Lupin and my assessment of some of the people here, I was so wrong. One person in particular, I was thinking about that just yesterday, how my sense of this person just wasn't him or it at all. Look back at how I related to him when I had that, what I now see as incorrect perception. And I have to laugh at myself because it's just so amusing. Don't get me wrong, I've really come to appreciate this person. I just had a perception of him that was based upon what he looked like, really, and how he came across and his affect that didn't capture the guy at all. So I'm glad to have been shown that I was wrong. And sometimes, of course, you may be wrong the other direction by putting your faith or trust in someone who ends up betraying you. But that's another issue.
I think one of the things that is really scary is like who tells you you're wrong? Because then it's, you've got the double whammy. You're not only wrong, but you're embarrassed about it.
Ooh, I hate that.
Because somebody points it out in front of other people that you want them to believe that you're a right person.
I know, I can feel my sphincter muscle just closing at that thought.
It's really uncomfortable. It's very uncomfortable.
But you know who makes me feel right is our sponsor, Go Raw. Go Raw is just right on or righteous food because it's just a wonderful way to be good to your body and your taste buds at the same time.
And if we're going to accept our bodies the way we are, we'd like them to be healthy, even though we may accept them as being unhealthy.
Well, that's part of the process. Think about all the major strides we've made in our understanding of life and the body because of all the problems that many of us have had with the body over the centuries. There's so much to be grateful for. As a matter of fact, I heard once that the amount of good that potentially comes out of something that may show up as wrong or not so good is like hundreds, potentially thousands of times, because it opens up all these new doors of possibility for our grand life of discovery in this amazing universe, which is what we like to look at on our show. And we'll do it again next week. Don't get me wrong. We will be here with each other all week long, Rochelle and I, continuing the conversation in our own way. But next week, we'll hopefully join with you. That being said, Rochelle, what would you like to remind us?
Well, remember, resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Don't get me wrong.
Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Last longer and hurt more. Okay. I won't get you wrong.
Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on job one for humanity, climate restabilization.
Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.